I want to keep the meeting rolling on time. Call to order the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Welcome today. Today we're having a presentation and discussion of MELF scholarships and the DHS allowances. Many of the members have been eagerly awaiting this testimony and to talk about the scholarships and allowances. And we have quite a hearing put together. First, we're going to have Art Rolnick, who's the Senior Vice President of the Federal Reserve, Mayor Chris Coleman from the City of St. Paul, obviously, and Superintendent Maria Starfun from St. Paul give testimony. Then members, we're going to go into MDE and MDH, talking more in detail specifically about the allowances piece. Then Dr. Scott McConnell is here from the university. He's going to talk about the evaluation piece. And if we hopefully don't run out of time, Sharice Potomac, lastly, will be talking more from the Department of Human Services. So the full agenda, we want to get started, and hopefully we'll, after each sort of set, we'll have some questions. So with that, I think we're going to start with Dr. Rolnick, and welcome to the committee. It's the second time in one day.
Yes.
And we're glad to have you. If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Art Rolnick. I'm the Director of Research at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. I serve on the Minnesota's Council of Economic Advisors. I also serve on Twin Cities United Way and co-chair Success by Six. I serve on the board of Ready for K. And maybe most importantly for this committee hearing, I serve on the board of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. I've been asked to speak about the scholarship program, MELF, and the importance of early childhood development. And as I've said many times publicly, we need to think about early childhood development as economic development. In fact, as Rob Grunewald, associate economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, and I have argued, it's the best economic development you can make. I know there's a lot of attention being paid right now to Northwest Airlines and its merger and its possible impact on the state. A lot of attention is being paid to the slowing economy and what that might mean for the state. But I would argue, by far, this issue, making sure all our kids are ready to learn, is the most important economic development issue facing our state. Currently, according to the Minnesota Department of Education, we estimate that close to 50% of our kids are not fully ready, are not fully prepared for kindergarten. Research, here I'm citing James Heckman, Nobel laureate at the University of Chicago, shows that when kids don't start ready for school, on average, and I point out on average, they're the kids that fall far behind, they're the kids that tend to drop out, they're the kids that have trouble in a market economy that's looking for skills, and those are this is the way the poverty cycle, if you will, continues. We also know from an awful lot of research that we can do a lot better, that empowering parents, in particular moms, starting prenatal, so when I talk about early childhood education, I'm really talking prenatal to five, that we can make a huge difference in the outcomes of these kids in terms of their health care by starting prenatal with public health nurse working with the mom. We can providing high quality early education programs, and the one that the particular program that Rob Grunewald and I have been suggesting is providing parents with scholarships not for 18-year-olds to go to college, but 3- and 4-year-olds to go to high quality early education programs. We think has the best chance of getting the kind of results that we see in the research. Rob Grunewald and I estimate that the return on the investment is 16% inflation adjusted, and most of that is a public return. So clearly we're underinvesting in early childhood education. This state is a leader right now in this area because of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. It's become a national issue. It's being debated, in fact, with our presidential candidates right now. Many states have now moved in the direction of increasing funding for early childhood education. The Gates and Buffett Foundation have moved in this direction. And they're looking at Minnesota because of the leadership that we've had for many years in education. I can tell you the business community is behind this initiative. Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, which the state created, consists of some of the top business leaders in the state. Let me just mention some of the members on this board. Brad Anderson, CEO of Best Buy, Doug Baker, CEO of Ecolab, Mark Banks, CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, Robert Brunick, President of the University of Minnesota, Mike Fitterman, CEO of Liberty Diversify, Rob Johnson, with past chair with Cargill, or formerly with Cargill, Warren Staley, the CEO of Cargill, Gene Taylor from the Taylor Corporation, and Charlie Weaver, Executive Director of Minnesota Business Partnership. You have the business community behind you because they get it. They get that this is economic development. It's long-term. It's not that transparent, but they get that in the long term, this is what's going to keep this economy as successful. Mel has raised $15 million on its way to $30 million to basically help you understand one of the most cost-effective ways of getting these kind of results. Its pilot flagship project is taking place as we speak in St. Paul. The idea is to empower the parents. Again, starting with mentors, prenatal, public health nurses or public educators. And then when the child turns three under this program, this pilot program in St. Paul, they will be provided scholarships. This is unique in the country, and I can tell you we have quite a few governors and quite a few foundations looking at this. In fact, we have this current administration looking very hard at this experiment. It's very simple to bring this to scale. I think Minnesota is in a position to do that. I think you should look long-term. The vision should be that every at-risk kid in this state starts ready for school, and I think the MELP is going to help you get there. But I would suggest that you start moving in this direction now. I can't see any reason for why we shouldn't think about bringing this to scale and doing it as quickly as we can. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mayor Coleman, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Please. I'm Chris Coleman, Mayor of the City of St. Paul, and Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today. It's an honor to follow someone like Art, and the work that he has done has led the way for the work that we're doing in the City of St. Paul, and certainly inspired me. I used to be in the investment business, and if I could ever have guaranteed my clients that I could have given them a 15% return on their investment, I'd still be in the investment business. So, and historically, it's been the role of city governments to, take care of basic needs like public safety, filling potholes, plowing roads, taking care of the parks and the libraries. However, this new century brought us new challenges from changing demographics, ever-tightening budgets, and increasingly complex social problems. We know that cities need to think differently and find new approaches to overcome the challenges and adapt to a new world economy. When I took office in January 2006, it was clear that our best strategy for a bright St. Paul future was to make a commitment to put every child on the road to success. Working side by side with the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, we've made great progress towards that goal through this program that we're describing today. As part of the Early Learning Committee, you all understand the importance of investing in children. Tremendous body of research has suggested exists to support investments in early education as a key strategy in closing the achievement gap. By starting early and creating supportive learning environments, we can ensure that all children are prepared to succeed in school and in life. We began our partnership with MELF in 2006 with the goal of developing a new scholarship model for the City of St. Paul. Through this partnership, we created the St. Paul Early Childhood Scholarship Program, which officially launched January 1st of this year. Our goals are to improve kindergarten readiness, increase access to early child care and education programs, increase the quality of existing programs, and support parents in helping their children prepare for kindergarten. St. Paul will be the first in the nation to pilot this model. It will begin with families who live on the north end and in the Frog Town that are living below 185% of federal poverty level. The St. Paul Early Childhood Scholarship Program will provide a two-year scholarship for families 3 years old with three-year-olds to use a quality early childhood program. We'll also connect families with a parent mentor who will encourage family health, provide information about child development, and assist in selecting quality child care. To date, we have approximately 80 children who are eligible to participate. Families are being connected to their parent mentors and are beginning to start the process of choosing a high-quality program. We're working with many local organizations to get the word out to families and continue this strong enrollment with the goal of reaching the families that need it most. My staff is working closely with Dr. Chris Sarfin in the St. Paul School District, Community Action Partnership for Ramsey, and Washington County Head Start, and early care and learning programs across St. Paul to ensure that children and families are aware of this funding. As a result, we're already seeing new investments in our community. I recently had the opportunity to meet with Dr. Diane Pivado, was opening a 24-hour child care development center, Agape, near the Unidale Mall on University Avenue. This innovative center will provide services for families transitioning out of crisis at the times that they need it the most. Also, New Horizons is opening a facility in the Empire building on Rice Street, which will provide new options to parents who worry about providing a safe environment for their children when they are working or getting an education. These are examples. These examples are just the beginning of what I know will be part of the accomplishments of this program. Through these partnerships, we'll be able to put our children on the road to success. I want to thank everyone that's been a part of this program. Mel, the St. Paul School District, Ramsey County Department of Health, Head Start, Minnesota Child Care, the list goes on. And I want to thank members of this committee for hearing about this program here today and supporting our project. Thank you for your support in funding the allowances project, and the staff at DHS has been helpful in working up through the details of this project. About 2,000 children in St. Paul will lead better lives through a combination of scholarships and the allowances project. We hope to continue our partnership to ensure that as many children as possible have these opportunities over the next several years. I want to just say that I can't think of anything more important for communities to be doing right now than investing in the future of the children. No matter what issue that you ask me to address, I will start by addressing early childhood education and preparedness and success in school, which will prepare children for success in life. There is no other way for me to fight crime unless I'm also working to make sure that children are finding other ways to spend their time after school, to make sure that they're staying in school and leading productive lives. By looking at an economic development strategy, education is the key and the cornerstone of everything that we would do there. Rebuilding communities, it comes back to education. There is no clearer benefit to a dollar invested than there is when you invest it early in a child's life. And I want to thank the members of the committee for supporting our efforts.
Well, thank you. A true believer. We have the superstar team here today, so thank you. And next, another superstar, we have the superintendent of St. Paul Schools. If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Great. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maria Karstarfen. I am the superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools. Thank you for inviting me here today with the rest of the superstars about the importance of investing in quality early education programs and share with you our experience today with our pre-kindergarten programs in St. Paul and our initial work with MELF getting the state allowances off the ground. St. Paul Public Schools serves a diverse population reflecting more than 70 languages and dialects. Daily, more than 41,000 kids arrive at our schools with an array of educational experiences and skills. Some are reading and doing math long before they enter kindergarten, whereas others have never held a pencil, waited in line, or had the fortune of even having books at home. Regardless of a student's preparation for school, our job is to raise expectations for all students and for their success. We know from experience that when we raise expectations, have high expectations for kids and families, they actually live up to them. Similarly, if we have low expectations, you can imagine what that result might look like. My point is that high expectations, no matter what the student's starting point, is important for us. I am proud to be here today with leaders to share a starting point of high expectations in early education. Our school district is on a mission and gaining momentum to close the achievement gap for all students. Given how pervasive and entrenched some of these gaps are nationally and in our state and in our district, no school district will close that gap or meet the needs of all students and families on its own. That's why I am so glad to talk to you today, because we need to be in partners to prevent the achievement gap through early childhood education. Our district is strengthening the support and connections between school, community, and family, and together we're starting to make gains. And what we do in St. Paul, what we believe will be a learning process applied across the state of Minnesota, if not the true unique model for the country. In our district, we call our work in early childhood education and our focus on secondary math, reading, and science the bookends of preventing and closing the achievement gap. The first bookend, investing in the early years, has helped our district become a model in the nation. Minnesota's 32-year-old early childhood family education program is the only one of its kind in the country, and St. Paul has the oldest continuous early childhood family education site in the country at Dayton's Bluff Elementary School. And apparently we have the oldest staff member, too, who introduced herself to me a few months ago. But she looks really good for her age. Our district has always been a national leader and a model in early childhood education. The achievement gap begins early, even before birth. We find disparities among our youngest students where preschoolers lag behind their peers in health, cognitive development, achievement of language and literacy skills, mathematical thinking, as well as physical, social, and emotional development. Based on the research, our district and the McKnight Foundation embarked on Project Early Kindergarten, PEK, which takes a community-wide approach to strengthening early education involving both schools and childhood settings. The program was first implemented in the fall of 2005 in our schools. We started working with child care centers in 2006, and as of fall 2007, 10 St. Paul schools, 6 child care centers, and 13 family child care homes offer PEK to students. The program targets early language learners, low-income children, and children needing special education services. In practice, most participants also represent racial and ethnic minorities. PEK aligns pre-kindergarten education with the district's K-12 curriculum model, the Project for Academic Excellence. It is the core of our reform for the district. And by the way, that was not my brainchild. You can thank Pat Harvey for that. The model emphasizes standards-based education and extensive professional development. Our rigorous program is mindful of young children's developmental needs while focusing on literacy and math, as well as critical thinking skills. We provide differentiated instruction based on student needs. Through McKnight, Early Reading First, and a separate MELF grant, St. Paul Public Schools also provides monthly professional development workshops and ongoing coaching in child care centers and licensed daycare homes to align curriculum with our district and track our children's progress until they reach kindergarten, and then we track them the regular way. We also screen kids in their child care centers, help them obtain their student number, facilitate the school application process, and actually provide parents with professional development too on being a better parent. And we are accountable for results and committed to rigorous independent evaluation conducted by the Wilder Foundation. Preliminary results for students participating in 2005-06 are promising. On average, children in PEK schools experience the following successes. In the year before kindergarten, they make faster progress than their peers nationally in vocabulary and early reading and writing skills. When they started kindergarten, they were ahead in vocabulary and early reading, writing, and math skills compared to demographically similar children who had not attended PEK. They were also ahead in vocabulary and early reading, writing, and math skills compared to their kindergarten classmates who came from a variety of backgrounds. Kindergarten teachers rated them significantly higher than their classmates in social skills and academic confidence. Principals and parents also provided positive feedback about their experience with the program. However, the district has made some changes to ensure that we continue to operate the programs with fidelity. We have consolidated, and this has happened under my tenure, all of our four-year-old programs under one office and have each program aligned to the Project for Academic Excellence. And while gains in math were promising, we introduced a new math curriculum that ended the math wars in our district, as the gains in early math skills did not appear to be as accelerated as we hoped them to be, because we can set targets, projections for what we think the growth should look like. PEA schools showed weaker gains for white students who generally started the program with stronger skills. Therefore, we're looking at ways to strengthen our differentiated instruction for small groups of students. Data is still not available from child care settings, but structured site observations show that the beginning of a standardization among children in care settings and child care sites in schools. Parents and teachers, when interviewed, said that PEK made a difference in preparing their children for kindergarten. The facts bear out this. Annually, our state conducts a study to track school readiness. Art Rolnick shared with you the percent of Minnesota children who are prepared to enter kindergarten. I'm immensely proud to report that St. Paul exceeds the state percentage. More than 72% of our children were proficient in development skills, knowledge, and behavior needed to enter kindergarten. With our partners, the state allowances, and our commitment from the referendum, we will offer 66 classes with 20 students per class for four-year-old students next year, including transportation. We will still have several hundred students on waiting lists. In addition, we will expand school readiness programs to 5 days a week to meet the criteria for school allowances. We're looking at adding three-year-old programs in two targeted neighborhoods through the scholarship programs if families can be identified to enroll in a manner that allows us to plan and budget for it. We will continue to provide rigorous staff development, update our curriculum and instruction, and address various implementation issues across sites. As you know, other than school readiness, there is no state or federal funding for school-based comprehensive pre-K programs. We meet continuously with our partners, as this is a pilot, to address barriers to participation and improve access to high-quality programs, whether in our schools, Head Start, or daycare. Now, to ensure success, we're looking into the following. We want to set up a process to administer the program so the school district can actually plan, staff, and budget for programs, including transportation for eligible students. As Mr. Rolnick mentioned, MELF's goal is to empower families. We know that at-risk families are also choosing our programs, and we have more demand that spots are actually than spots that are actually eligible. The goal is to accept students with allowances as part of our spring enrollment process. Unfortunately, the application was not available in time for our parent fair this year. Our parent fair happens in early February. Our placement center, 3-year-old screeners, and home visiting programs and schools will assist our families and filling out the applications and provide them with enrollment options starting now throughout the school year. And we'd like to eliminate any unnecessary steps or trips to other sites, as families do not have personal transportation, and where they fall socioeconomically and their status really does impact their ability to get access to all of the bureaucratic process, get through the bureaucratic processes we set up. If the application and required documentation becomes a barrier to enrollment, as we have seen in our state's health care programs, it should be immediately modified. Early evidence from MELF indicates that it's too early to tell if this is really an issue. But based on our experience, it's our recommendation that families who have self-identified as free or reduced lunch status, we should make them automatically eligible for state allowances for school programs, which would then ease enrollment for younger children of enrolled St. Paul Public School families. Families and districts are accustomed to this whole process, and it has been used legitimately for determining both eligibility for school nutrition programs and for school compensatory revenue. Further, we believe that all children, regardless of immigration status, should be allowed access to our programs. In our business, we don't get a choice. We don't get to choose who comes to our schoolhouse gate, and quite frankly, we don't care how they come to us. We know from research that if we can educate them, they will break that cycle of poverty. They will help in the economic progress of our state. They will help build a stronger nation. And ultimately, that reduces burdens on other social agencies in our state. Finally, there seems to be some confusion over how this rating system will work. We believe that the Minnesota Department of Education should provide the QRS ratings of educational programs, and that ranking should be done in an explicit, transparent way. Finally, it will be critical for our families to have some idea if the program will continue for 2009-10 school year, as they will be making arrangements for their children this spring. I mean, the next one, but, you know, in every spring. We do applaud the state for funding pilots like these, for our business community stepping up and being engaged at such a high level, for our leaders, our city leaders and county leaders to be having these conversations. Like all pilots, we will work to improve the implementation so that it could be scaled up statewide to ensure that resources are targeted for at-risk children to have access to quality schools, Head Start, and daycare programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we probably have about 5 minutes, and then we're going to move to the sort of nuts and bolts folks to talk about what's happening with the scholarships. We appreciate all of your comments from sort of the big picture down to what's happening with the implementation, because we're very interested in that as we design things. I think we're aware we could do probably a much better job on our end, but we also want to know what's happening. So we'll take a question or two, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, in your testimony, and I think I heard you right, you said that you supported the quality ratings coming from the Department of Education. Did I hear you right, or...
Superintendent?
There's a rating system of educational programs, and it is more about, yes, so we do support the idea of being rated and ranked, having criteria and standards, in the same way we support state standards for what we should be working on for curriculum and all of our other programs. The point is that the process for the rating system should be transparent. How people are making decisions, what those criteria are, all of that should be very explicit so that, you know, folks understand why and how they got to the ranking they did get.
Madam Chair.
And Representative Russell, I also say the next folks are the people that are implementing it, so we could make sure and ask them to address that specifically. Do you have a follow-up?
Well, when you said that, it was kind of implied in your statement that there was somebody saying otherwise, and I didn't realize that was an issue. I mean, if it wasn't the Department of Education, who would it be?
Well, Representative Garofalo, the issue, one of the hard things is that there's child care involved, which is all overseen by DHS. And so when these allowances were put in the bill in the middle of the night, they were put in the DHS section of the bill and not the MDE section of the bill. And that is causing a lot of problems, as you're going to hear about. And we do want to hear about the problems, but it's for the education system and the child care system don't necessarily meld well at that point.
Well, goody. I'll have to stick around and watch this then. Thanks.
Representative Greiling, then Representative Peterson, and then we'll have to move on.
Madam Chair, we could talk about that a long time, but the main thing was the agreement was to have these only be for child care, and that's where they were in the DHS budget, but the Senate somehow applied them to education as well. Those senators. But my question is, in St. Paul, when you're using these allowances, how do the MELF scholarships and the public allowances go together? Is it joint funding, part MELF and part public allowances, or are they two separate things? And if they're separate, is there any difference in qualifications for them?
Mayor Coleman, or do you need
Mayor Coleman? And Representative Bradley, I think there's somebody that can get a little bit more, at least Carrie from my state staff can tell you a little bit more specifically about how those are breaking out, because there's the private fund, or there's the money from the MELF Foundation that is supporting this. Lisa, do you want to?
Okay. We can do it briefly also, because Lisa's on the schedule to testify later, but if you can give a brief answer for now.
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Caribou?
My name is Lisa Caravelle. I'm the Early Education Project Coordinator with Mayor Coleman's office in St. Paul. Part of what I was going to talk about as well on the allowance testimony is to highlight some of those key differences. One of the sheets that you have here talks about is called Mayor Coleman's Early Education Initiative. And on the back there's a little graph that sort of displays how the allowances are similar and different. Some of the key similarities are the goal of both are to really provide funds to families to access high-quality child care and early education opportunities. Some of the differences are in the scholarship program. It is for families specifically in two neighborhoods in the city, the North End and the Frogtown areas of St. Paul. For the allowances, families citywide are eligible for the state dollars. The other component are for scholarships, the child needs to be age 3. For allowances, the child should be 3 or age 4 to enter in. The income guidelines are the same, similar as the allowances, both together. For the scholarship program, the citizenship status of the child is not looked at as far as application, but it is part of the allowances. As far as the funding, and one of the questions that I had seen earlier is, if a child receives an allowance, can they also receive a scholarship? The goal is to kind of layer that funding in those two neighborhoods. So a scholarship can be up to $13,000 for a center-based full-time program. If a child is eligible for the allowance as well, that kind of makes that fills in part of that $13,000, but the goal is to layer both of those. But I'd be happy to answer additional questions as well during the allowance discussion.
We're going to have her testify after this, too. So I think that's very helpful, though, to get a picture of that. And Representative Peterson, why don't we have your question, and then we'll have to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's just very quickly, in your thinking about fiscal agents, and I assume the City of St. Paul is a fiscal agent, I'd like to know what percentage administrative fee you are charging or spending either, and are you charging that back to MELF, or is that part of the City's responsibility? And then probably to Mr. Rolnick, who else do you see public entities or agencies as being the fiscal agencies? Could it be a school district, a city, a county? Have you thought about any other entities that would be fiscal agents for these scholarships? So whether it's directed at two people.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representatives, I'll answer your specific question regarding the administration for the allowances, and they'll talk more about that as well. But each grantee was given 8% of an administration cost, and we at the City of St. Paul are working with Resources for Child Caring to help us administer the both the scholarships and the allowances portion. So that 8% is going to primarily the cost of that is for them to administer that, and some of our
Dr. Rollman?
You know, there's a variety of different models that are being used actually around the country on this issue. There are some private organizations, in fact, in the western suburbs. There's an interfaith group that's raising private money to provide scholarships in the western suburbs for low-income families. In Nebraska, I believe they are using government money to finance scholarships there. In Denver, they're using a government model. The vision that Rob Grunewald and I came up with as a way of doing this is thinking of this as ultimately a partnership between the federal government, the state government, and business community to come up with an endowed fund in which would permanently fund, in perpetuity, at-risk, for all at-risk kids, scholarships and mentors. The endowed fund, the idea is to make a third from the state, a third from the a private sector, and a third from the federal government. And it would be, our view of it, it would be administered by something like MELF, a Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, with input from the state, from the private sector, and the business community in particular. I think there are models like that that would work very well. I think this is basically a market-driven approach, so it makes a lot of sense to the business community. That's one way of doing this, and I think we're on a learning curve here, and I'm hoping in a couple of years to come back to you with different approaches here in Minnesota, in Nebraska, in Colorado. We also have Governor Joni Rell in Connecticut looking at something like this for Hartford, Connecticut. And so I think there may be various ways of doing this. I'd like Minnesota to be out in front because of the incredible support we're getting from the business community. I think we can probably show the most effective way of doing this.
Good. Well, thank you. I want to thank you, all three of you, for being here, Dr. Rolnick and Mayor Coleman and Superintendent Kersarfan. I think when you're visionaries and you're in the middle of the vision, it can be really tough work to see and how to make these things actually happen. But I think back to first meeting Art Rolnick, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and this was just a white paper and a dream, and now we're doing this. And I think, as tough as that is, members, what a great vision and what a wonderful place to start this in Minnesota and get it off the ground. And there's going to continue to be challenges, but the ultimate beneficiaries, as Mayor Coleman said, and the superintendent and Dr. Rolnick, are the kids, and really what that's going to do to lift up our young people in our state. So thank you for being here. And I'd like to call the next group to come forward. Chuck Johnson, Deb Swenson-Clatt, Karen Carlson, Lisa Caribou, and John Woodwick. And while they're doing that, we have to do the approval of the minutes. Let's see. Representative Bly, have you looked at the minutes?
Yes, I think they're in good order, so I would move that we approve the minutes.
Okay, so moved. Representative Bly moves approval of the minutes for February 14th. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. With that, we're going to move on to the sort of nuts and bolts piece of this, and we'll probably allow a little more for time for questions, but we also still have to get to the evaluation piece. So, let's see, who is starting? Okay,
Madam
Chuck Johnson. Okay. Welcome
Chuck
to the committee.
I'm Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. I'm going to give you a brief overview, remind you of what the legislation that was passed last year said and did, and then Deb Swenson-Clatt from the department will fill you in more details where we are with implementation, and also talk about how we're doing quality ratings for the child care programs. And Ms. Carlson from MDE will talk about how they're doing quality ratings for the school-based and Head Start programs. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. We're talking today about the pre-kindergarten exploratory project, as it was called in the law. We're referring to it here as allowances, as the chair has been doing, to distinguish it from the scholarships, which are the MELS pieces being implemented in the two districts in St. Paul, which you just heard about. As I hope you're aware, this is one of many strategies that we're implementing right now in Minnesota. The allowance is a scholarship, the parent aware tool, the school readiness connections within the child care system, all of which are part of trying to pilot and learn as much as we can about what works in Minnesota to get kids ready for kindergarten. And I think it's important to think about this as a pilot that we're in and trying to learn, because that really is the stage that we're in right now, and it's very important to thinking about how all these pieces fit together, how we're attempting to fit them together. So the 2007 legislation for the pre-kindergarten exploratory project is in your package. I'm just going to briefly walk through what is in the legislation and what it is that we're now in the process of implementing. The legislation provides allowances of up to $4,000 per child per year the parents can use to purchase early care education to help their children get ready for kindergarten. The allowances are directed at 3- and 4-year-olds. And the family must be low income, and it's defined as below 185% of the poverty level. The program also, in terms of eligibility, they also have to select a program that meets the quality rating, which I mentioned, Deb Swenson-Clatt and Karen Carlson will talk a little bit more about that in greater detail. But that's really the same concept as in the scholarships. The idea is having money going to the family, but then flowing to a program that meets certain standards, so that we know we're putting money into programs that are going to get kids ready for kindergarten. Although we're still testing that proposition, that's the theory that we're moving forward with. Parents can choose licensed child care, school-based, pre-kindergarten programs, Head Start programs, as long as they meet either a rating within the Parent Aware Scholarship or Parent Aware Rating System, or meet the provisional rating as provided by DHS or MDE, as provided in the law. The legislature appropriated $6 million. That is being distributed across three sites. The St. Paul site, which is the entire city of St. Paul. You heard scholarships are just in the two planning districts, two neighborhoods within St. Paul. The allowances are citywide. Hennepin County, which is actually two separate sites, North Minneapolis and the Wayzata School District. And then Blue Earth, as a fiscal agent for Blue Earth and Miquelet counties down in South Central Minnesota. The Department of Human Services is administering the contract and overseeing the project, working with MELF and MDE as we do that. MELF is responsible for evaluating the project, and you'll hear later from Dr. McConnell from the university about the evaluation and the folks that are involved in that and what we're trying to learn from that. A little bit about how the allowances and Parent Aware fit together, sort of the pieces here. As I mentioned, we're trying to fit these pieces together to learn as much as we can over the next couple of years about what gets kids ready for kindergarten, particularly at-risk kids and low-income kids. There are similarities between the scholarships and the allowances. As I said, they have a similar conceptual framework of providing money to families, low-income families, to provide two quality programs, and the rating systems in terms of what programs would qualify are the same. But there are differences. As I mentioned, the St. Paul scholarships are only available in the two neighborhoods of St. Paul, whereas we have the broader sites that, where the allowances are being provided. There's an obvious difference in the dollar amount that's available to a family, $4,000 in the publicly funded allowances, and up to $13,000 in the privately funded MELF scholarships that are being provided in St. Paul. For the allowances, as I mentioned, kids can be 3 or 4 years old to receive an allowance. For the scholarships, it's only a 3-year-old, starting with 3-year-old children. And a family can qualify for both an allowance and a scholarship, and that would happen only, again, with two neighbors of St. Paul, and we would layer the allowance and then the scholarship on top of that when we encounter situations where a child might be eligible for both. The allowances are closely aligned with the parents' aware rating system, as I already mentioned. The concept is that we are trying to identify what programs in the community meet certain standards for getting kids ready for kindergarten, and then try to move funding and at-risk kids toward those programs. And again, with the evaluation, we'll learn how well that works, but that's the concept that we're pursuing. I'm going to turn now and have Deb Swenson Klatt from the department fill you in on where we're at with the implementation at a more detailed level.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deb Swenson Klatt. I'm with the Department of Human Services, the Child Development Services Unit that oversees child care quality initiatives and other supports for school readiness. As Assistant Commissioner Johnson said, I'll talk a little bit about the implementation of the allowances, and then I'll describe to you a little bit more about the approved programs that are lined up and are in the process of lining up to care for children and provide services for children receiving allowances. And then finally, I'll talk about the quality criteria for child care programs before Karen Carlson talks about the criteria for Head Start and school readiness programs. The implementation of the allowances initiative in this time-limited pilot is ambitious and would not have been possible without the cooperation and the coordination of many partners, and for that we thank the MEL, the Department of Education, and the three grantees, the City of St. Paul, the Hennepin County, and Blue Earth County grantees. As Assistant Commissioner Johnson mentioned, the Department of Human Services is responsible for overseeing the grants. With these local governmental entities, contracts are currently in place for Hennepin County and Blue Earth Counties, and the contract with the City of St. Paul is in process, with the City Council having approved the contract on February 6th. Staff from both Department of Human Services and Education have worked very closely with the grantees since last fall to get the project off the ground. You'll hear a little bit more from representatives from two of the pilot areas in a few minutes. At the state level, our work to move forward has meant developing policies and procedures, some forms, and some other materials that go along with developing a new program, so that we can provide standardized information to families and programs across all of the pilot sites. You should have in front of you the brochure for the allowance program, and each of the brochures contain the same content information, but they're customized for each of the pilot areas. So there's the one that you have could be for the City of St. Paul with a City of St. Paul phone number on it, but there are brochures for North Minneapolis, for the Wayzata School District, and for Blue Earth and Nicollet Counties. Along with that, you could also have the allowance application that parents would complete, will complete in your packet. And as we move forward, each of the grantees, those three entities, are responsible for moving the outreach and dissemination of these materials out to their communities in ways that are best meet the needs of their communities. CHS is supporting and has placed a high priority on supporting access to families that speak languages other than English. So there, you can see the translated information in the brochure and the application, but there's also access publicized to a language line so that both families and, for that matter, providers who speak other than English can understand and access the program. As I move on to talking about the approved programs that parents can choose from, choose to bring their allowance to, I'd refer you to the Parent Aware brochure that's also in front of you. The Parent Aware rating tool is the name of the quality rating system in Minnesota, and as Assistant Commissioner Johnson mentioned, the allowances use this rating tool to provide parents with information about the approved programs, whether they're child care programs, Head Start, or school readiness programs that families can select. Staff from both Human Services and Education have been at work determining which early education and which early care and education programs qualify for an allowance or for a scholarship. And at this point, approved so far are 93 accredited child care centers across the metro area that families can choose from, 23 Head Start program sites, and 34 school-based pre-K site for school readiness program site. In addition, we have been hard at work, actually the Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network has been very hard at work, reaching out to and inviting into the process, the rating process, child care programs that are not accredited. And at this moment, we have 8 licensed family child care providers that are participating in the Parent Aware rating process. And we're looking to issue ratings to some of those in the next couple of weeks. 13 child care centers are also participating in the full rating process. And I'll describe a little bit about, more about the rating process in another minute. The Child Care Resource and Referral Network holds orientations on a regular basis in all of the pilot areas for child care programs to learn more about and hopefully sign up for and enroll in the Parent Aware approval or ratings process. So I'd like to describe 3 ways quickly in which child care programs can be approved to provide services to a child with an allowance. And then, again, turn it over to Karen Charleston to describe Head Start and School Readiness Program approval processes. So, again, there are 3 avenues for programs, child care programs, to become approved. The first option is one that's outlined in the allowance statute. It is the provisional approval process. And here, programs must meet the criteria outlined in the statute. And the process is essentially a pass-fail process. That is, if a program misses any one item, they will not be provisionally approved. So to become a provisionally approved, a program must first partner with families. They must document and show us that they have family partnership strategies in place. Second, they must use a research-based curriculum. Third, they must show us that they use a research-based assessment tool to track the child's learning. And then finally, they must offer services that are of adequate intensity and duration. So those are the criteria for the provisional approval process. And it is intended to be a process that is a little bit quicker, and it will, as described in statute, end June 30th, 2009. A second option for child care programs is to seek a full rating through the Parent Aware rating process. This rating process checks to see that programs are meeting the same criteria as I described for the provisional approval process. Plus, there's some additional items that they must document for us or show us that they can achieve. And again, in your packet, there's a little bit of information on the full rating process. These sheets that have the yellow bar at the top and the purple at the bottom, if they were printed in color. there's one for child care centers and another for family child care homes. So it says Parent Aware rating tool indicators of quality at the top of it. And this gives you a summary of the quality criteria for a full rating through Parent Aware. So in addition to the criteria that I described for provisional approval, programs going through the full rating process must also have an on-site observation of the environment and the child care interactions. Those interactions and the environment are observed by trained observers housed at the University of Minnesota. They must also document that they not only have a research-based assessment tool in place, but that they are using that information with families, or sharing that information with families, and then using the results to work with the children in their program. And third, they must document the professional development, the education and training of their program staff. Once the program moves through the parent aware rating process and provides that documentation and finishes the observation process, they receive a rating from the Department of Human Services that is either 1, 2, 3, or 4 stars. For the purposes of the allowances program and the scholarship program, the program must have a 3 or 4 star rating to be approved. A third and final option for scholarship program approval is accreditation. And if a program is accredited through a national accrediting body that we recognize, they will automatically receive a 4 star rating. So, 3 ways for scholarship programs to move through the approval process. With that, I'll turn it over to you.
What I'd like to do is have Ms. Carlson, but I would also like the folks that are implementing this to talk and then have the members ask questions so we can get both from you all, obviously, having pulled this together, and then people that are trying to implement it so the members can kind of see both sides, and then we'll take questions. So, Ms. Carlson, and then we'll move, we could have you two move up right after that. Ms. Carlson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Karen Carlson, and I'm the Early Learning Services Director for the Department of Education. And my role is to walk you through the approval process that MDE has for Head Start and school-based programs. And in order to promote school readiness, the legislative intent of the law, we kind of informed ourselves based on 5 things. One, a persistent finding of 4 years of studying kindergarten within first institution school. The outcomes that we had, DHS and MDE jointly sponsored a governor's summit on early education and school readiness. 3, we reviewed the current child development and early childhood research. 4, we looked at our programs that were different than child care programs, and they're publicly funded, and both of them have as their express purpose to promote school readiness. So that was a little different animal right off the get-go. And then we had lots of meetings and lots of discussion with DHS. The kindergarten study, I've talked to you before about that, and the news is not much different for this year, although we're releasing a report probably next month. But every year we see the same trends, and there's about 10 to 12% of the kids that are not ready for kindergarten, and they are from low-income families and we're with low levels of maternal education, and that doesn't ever seem to vary. We see the pre-kindergarten exploratory project as a great way to increase the proficiency of those particular children, and that's what we are trying to do with the indicators. And the Governor's Summit, I think I've already talked to you about 2 mostly. We did identify 10 research-based elements that are of particular importance to programs that get these children ready that come to that have are at risk for coming to kindergarten unprepared. It's always so much language. The things that we found that were consistent across the national research were that there needs to be instructional content that's of sufficient duration and intensity to get to these kids, and that the areas of math and mathematical thinking and language and literacy are the important compensatory program areas, and guess what? They coincide with the SAIC profile. So that's what we were really concentrating on. We're kind of in a recent surge of research that is really looking at the quality of adult-child interaction and what goes on actually in the classroom. We've looked for quite a while at structural elements like, you know, teacher credentials and the scheduling and the kind of give a daily plan of children. But now we're starting to, the research community is starting to really try to identify what are practices that really make a difference for kids. And so we sort of have this, what they call structural elements and then process elements, and the structural stuff, you have to have teacher credentials and all that kind of stuff they talked about. You have to have that as the base for a quality program, but in and of itself it's not enough, so it's this interaction that we kind of latched onto as really critical for these kids, and so we proposed that there be this, there is an observation tool to get at this, and so we wanted that to be part of our indicators. And so it is at the 3- and 4-star level, not at the provisional level. Then, as I said, our school-based and our Head Start programs are supposed to get kids ready for school. That's what they're all about. And so you will recall that we already in state statute have requirements for school readiness programs, like we have to have the kids assessed at the with a research-based assessment tool, have to have a research-based curriculum, and among other requirements. So those, our intent was to try and move our programs beyond their statutory requirements to really get them to be quality programs for these parents to buy out their allowances. We had to balance that a little bit with that we don't have those same requirements for child care, and so it was kind of a little negotiation and lots of spirited discussion over the summer about kind of how to weave those indicators together. So you'll see if you look, you know, if you kind of compare the DHS handout with the MDE handout, that the indicators are not in all cases absolutely strictly the same indicator. They're always aligned to one another. So while they may be worded differently, they're getting at pretty much the same thing. But we hadn't adapted the wording to make it appropriate for our program. But I will point out that we do have one additional indicator that DHS doesn't have for child care, and that's the intensity and duration of the instructional content. So that was specifically our way of pushing our programs to improve their quality. And it's important, I think it was talked about how to remember that Head Start gets an automatic provisional approval in the law and just like accredited child care center programs. We did, though, also develop a 3-star path and a 4-star path for both Head Start and school-based programs to go through if they wanted to go beyond their provisional approval. And we sent out those indicators to the affected school districts and the Head Start programs sometime in the fall.
You can start to wrap up so we can hear from these students.
And Jeff's already told you the numbers. I think we have a little discrepancy in one of the numbers, but we'll figure that one out. So I think I have one more program approved. So that's it.
Thank you. Let's have the two come up and they'll ask some questions. I also want to thank Representative Greiling for being here, Chair Greiling, who is over the K-12 Finance Division and is very the committee is very interested in this. And as we know, our bill gets rolled into your bill, so we appreciate you being here and learning with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Good. Welcome to the committee. Who would like to start?
I'll start. Hello again. I'm Lisa Caraville with the City of St. Paul, and coordinating both the scholarship program and the allowances for St. Paul. I want to talk specifically about the allowances, as that's what we're focusing on. Before that, I just wanted to point out a couple of quick things for the scholarships. We had provided a handout that's called St. Paul Early Childhood Scholarships that kind of gives some specifics about what that looks like, what the structure is and numbers and things like that, that you guys can refer to at a later time. And there may be also some peach-colored brochures that are for the scholarship as well. But I want to talk specifically about the allowances. As you know, we were named as one of the grantees to receive funding under the legislation. And as I mentioned, we are working with Resources for Child Caring to be our primary administrator of the allowances. They are also administering the scholarships. And so there was a nice opportunity to have that. Where families are hearing about both these programs, they call the same place, they apply at the same place. So that's been a nice thing that we've been working with Resources for Child Caring. And as I mentioned, all the grantees were given approximately 8% for administrative budget, and so that's what we've been using as well. I wanted to talk just a little bit about some of the outreach and what we're doing to try and be sure that we're reaching the families most at need. Give you some examples of what we've been doing in those two neighborhoods, as we can also utilize the allowances for those neighborhoods. We have some very, very enthusiastic. We have a county commissioner who's doing door knocking in these two districts, door-to-door families. These neighborhoods were chosen because of very high need and high levels of poverty. We are also, for the scholarships that began in January, Resources for Child Caring has notified the families on the basic sliding fee waiting list to let them know about it, and that's also an option for once these allowances roll out, is that a group of families that obviously has a high need. We are partnering closely with the school district, with Head Start programs with child care, to also help have them inform families about this opportunity, providing information, and we'll be doing the same with the allowances. Regarding the status of our contract, as Chuck had mentioned, we have passed it through our city council and just getting the signatures on our end. So now that we have applications and we have some of the forms to begin processing, we should be ready to go in a week or so from the St. Paul side. So that's a real brief overview, but again, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the rest of the committee members. My name is John Woodwick, and I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Valley Action Council. We're based in Blue Earth County. There was a question earlier about partnerships and getting the allowances off the ground. Well, as I said, Minnesota Valley Action Council is a private, nonprofit community action agency. So you do have a nonprofit sector involved in this, implementing this pilot as well. In the Blue Earth Nicollet areas, it's not as complicated as it is in the city, because it is only the allowance program that is available in Blue Earth and Nicollet County. To give you some idea that the amount of funds available, there could be 92 families that could be served in Blue Earth and Nicollet through this project. There was a newspaper article that was in your packet, I think it was from the Mankato Free Press, dated earlier in February, and it just states that the average cost of child care in Blue Earth Nicollet area is $5,000 to $6,000 a year. And so $4,000 allowances could go a long way towards easing the burden that low-income families face trying to secure quality child care. Minnesota Valley Action Council first heard about this program with discussions with Blue Earth County back on December 13th. We signed a contract with the county to start delivery of this program on February 6th. On February 8th, we had a coordinator hired and is ready to go, has attended some of the parent aware trainings that have been provided for private child care providers in Mankato. The applications for low-income parents are available now. On our website, you could go and get the brochures on the allowance program. And so we are ready to start taking applications from families.
Yeah, so thank you. You bet. Thank you for coming up all the way from Mankato, too. I hope the weather wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't too bad. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, are there questions? You know, I think it's interesting to hear, and that you cite this article that 5,000 to 6,000 is cost and 4,000 goes a long way, because in the metro, we kind of hear that it's under the amount. So it's interesting, members, just as we get this implemented, to kind of see where things are. Are there questions, Representative Norna?
Yeah. Madam Chair, just a question for St. Paul. I think on the bottom of this one information sheet here, it says families apply to the program only one time. Is that each year then that they apply, or is that good for multiple years?
It's good for multiple years, Representative. It's specifically for the scholarship, it's they apply at one time, and so we're not going back to look at income guidelines and things like that repetitively.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Other questions? Oh, I thought we'd have a lot of implementation questions. So as the members are absorbing all this, I think. I will
ask the last group to come forward and then make some comments in the transition. Members, we have met about this a couple of times, and Representative Greiling has been involved in that, and we're still trying to sort out. Obviously, this is a very quick timeline, so we're still seeing how the implementation is going, and then the sort of differences between what MDE does and what MDHS does is also, we're keeping an eye on that, but we're still trying to figure out exactly how that's going to work. Louise Stoney, who's a national finance consultant for early childhood, says you have to have a common set of standards. So ideally, we would have one set of standards that kids could meet, and not one for education and one for child care. So that's something I hope we can work towards. So with that, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott McConnell. I'm a professor of education psychology and a director of the Center for Early Education and Development at the University of Minnesota. My early research career was studying how to promote friendships in young kids, and my group noticed it's much smaller than the other group, so I guess I have to do a little work. What I'm going to try and talk to you about this afternoon is the evaluation of MELF activities broadly, briefly, and then the evaluation of the allowance programs, particularly in a little bit more detail. You should have a handout that we've also been teased when we come over from the U. You have to have PowerPoint slides, this time you have it on paper. And so it says at the top, Early Childhood Learning Finance Division. And I'm going to use these as my outline as I walk through, and I'll try and keep you pointed at the right pages as I go. I want to talk very, very briefly about the MELF and its programmatic activities today, about how we're approaching the task of evaluating this allowances program that was created by the legislature in the state last year, the relation of that allowance evaluation to other evaluation activities that are being done by the MELF, and then if you have any questions, see if I can answer them. The Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, as Dr. Rolnick said, is a private enterprise that is charged with creating and identifying a cost-effective system of care for promoting school readiness of at-risk kids in the state. The MELC has a number of major programmatic elements that we've targeted for evaluation, and I'll tell you about who the we is as I go along. The first one is Parent Aware, the quality rating system that's been implemented by DHS, that's being used for the scholarship and the allowance plans, and hopefully for other activities as well. The MELF has agreed to evaluate the Parent Aware program. So there's a specific evaluation activity for Parent Aware underway for utilization, for information that it gathers, for its validity. The MELF is also evaluating the St. Paul Scholarship pilot that Dr. Rolnick and Mayor Coleman talked about. There are a variety, I think now 10 or 11 innovation grants, very specific programs that the MELF has funded that we're looking at the effectiveness of. And then 4 comprehensive scalable communities. You just heard from 2 of them, the St. Paul Scholarship site, Blue Earth Nicollet County, North Minneapolis, and Wayzata are also these comprehensive scalable communities where there's a lot of stuff going on and the MELF is trying to pay attention to systems and coordination. So all 4 of those programmatic elements, Parent Aware, the scholarship evaluation, the innovation grants, and these comprehensive scalable communities are being evaluated explicitly by the MELF. To the extent possible, we are trying to evaluate these fairly different programmatic elements in a common framework so that once we're done, we can identify the ways in which they are all separate pieces of a coordinated system. If you jump to slide 4, why is the University of Minnesota generally and the Center for Early Education and Development particularly involved in this effort? When the MELF was first being created, the executive directors, Dwayne Benson and then Barb Yates, came over to see Bob Brunick to see if they could involve him in the MELF in 2 different ways. As Dr. Rolnick mentioned, President Brunick serves on the board of the MELF. But the MELF was also interested in recruiting the university as a research institution within the state and a public institution in being involved in the evaluation and to some extent sort of the holding of longitudinal information about this effort. So with President Bruning's support and encouragement, I guess would be a polite word, our center, the Center for Early Education and Development, got involved. What we've been doing for the last just about 2 years now is first consulting with the MELF board and staff about the design and implementation of evaluation activities for their work. Secondly, to coordinate the work of all of the evaluators. I'm going to tell you about those different groups in just a minute. The evaluators, the program staff that are implementing different activities of the MELF, and policymakers to make sure that the evaluation system that we have addresses as many needs and questions as possible and answers those questions as clearly as possible. Our center is also involved in direct evaluation. Some of the smaller innovation grants are projects where we are working with the grantees to design and implement their evaluation activities. And then there's other duties as assigned, like come over and talk to this committee. our primary components, as we've approached this task of trying to measure these programmatically distinct elements that are funded by or being coordinated through the MELS activities, I'm to slide five now. We've tried to use three sort of broad principles to guide our work at SEED, Center for Early Education and Development. First, we wanted an overarching conceptual model for what the system of early care and education might look like as it comes online, and so that we could think about the MELS work. In essence, what's the goal? What do we want this system to look like so that we can assess the extent to which the system is moving in that direction? Secondly, we wanted a common measurement model that allowed us to be able to articulate the contributions of really, really different programs, whether it's a program that's giving parents information about the quality of the programs that their kids attend, a program that serves teen moms, or a program that's promoting language literacy and math thinking for five-year-old kids. We wanted to be able to say to what extent are each of those really, really different efforts contributing to an overall program or an overall effort to promote school readiness. So a common measurement model that's fairly elaborate, but nonetheless common, was our second effort. The third one is that we're trying, to the extent possible, to coordinate the data collection, data sharing, and longitudinal analyses to go on underneath all of these projects. There's just a question about interviewing or having families complete applications. The way that we've been thinking about this is, how many times do we need to ask the families the birth date of their child? If we could do it once and appropriately share that information across all of the people who need to know the birth date of that child, that would be more efficient. So we're trying to achieve some degree of efficiency that way. I mentioned that the MELS has a number of programmatic elements, and there are different groups that are responsible for the particular evaluation of each of those. Parent Aware, the Parent Aware program, is being evaluated by Child Trends, which is a national research and evaluation organization that has an office here in the Twin Cities. The St. Paul Scholarship Pilot is being evaluated by SRI International, a very large program that I'll tell you a little bit more about when we talk about the allowances, that's based in Menlo Park, California. As I mentioned, SEED is doing the innovation grants, and then along with Wilder Research, we're doing a couple of different efforts at looking at these comprehensive scalable communities. It may be of interest to members or to the committee. Richard Chase and the Wilder Research Group have just completed what they've called a baseline study that describes both parents and program status with respect to early care and education in these four target communities that have been identified by the MELS. If you turn to slide 7 on page 4, so within this big context, now what I want to do is drill into this the allowances program. Given that the allowances were going to be added to this mix, there was strong interest in making sure that their unique contributions and efforts were evaluated. So the quick history of this is that the legislature, perhaps in the middle of the night, came up with the idea for allowances. It came into law. It was implemented and has been implemented relatively quickly by DHS and MDE. And simultaneously, the MELS got involved in some discussion about whether they might be able to support an evaluation for that. We, as the coordinators of that evaluation effort, worked with the MELS, and the MELS signed a contract with SRI International, Donna Spiker and Erica Gaylor particularly, to design and implement this evaluation. So now a good fraction of what I'm going to say is representing what Dr. Spiker and Gaylor would say if they were here instead of being in California, where it's warmer. So quickly to tell you about the evaluation of the allowances program, I'm going to touch on four quick comments. First, who will conduct it? Second, what are the questions? Third, what kinds of data will be collected? And fourth, what are the next steps? Page 5, slide 9, who will conduct the evaluation? As I mentioned, SRI International is doing this. SRI International is a large private nonprofit organization that within early childhood has a sterling reputation based on a lot of work over the last decade or so evaluating state and local initiatives in early childhood. Most significantly, First Five, a large statewide effort in California. SRI designed and implemented the initial evaluation of that program. These folks understand both the rigor, the importance of rigor and high quality evaluation, and the logistical demands of doing it in community settings. The SRI staff has worked on a variety of activities, and I, as the coordinator and sort of the program officer for their effort, I am delighted that we were able to recruit them for this effort. They are a great group of folks to work with. The allowance evaluation will address four primary questions, and I think it's important for you members to consider how these questions may or may not answer questions that you have about implementation of an innovation in early childhood education and development. The questions are these. First, who are the children who are receiving the allowances? What are the characteristics of these kids and their families? Who signs up? Secondly, what early childhood ed programs and services do the children access with their allowances, and do the allowances change what they use? Do we see families moving towards more hours of high-quality care and education? Do they move toward a different kind of setting? What happens? Where do they go once they have these allowances? Third, how are the allowances used with other funding sources to increase access or the quality of early care and education programs in which children participate? Once the programs receive these funds, how do they spend them? Do they open up more slots for high-risk kids? Do they open up for more hours? Or do they use those funds to invest in professional development for their staff? And then last, are children who receive the allowances using them to access high-quality early childhood education and early childhood care and education programs? Again, where are the kids ending up? The allowance data collection is going to be primarily through telephone interviews. SRI will get information about both the families that are receiving the allowances and the programs that they're enrolled in from the states and local grantees. They will do telephone interviews with the parents and with the programs, and then a variety of secondary analyses will turn back to data that we're collecting either through Parent Aware or through some of the other seed and MELF evaluations. We hope to coordinate this with other MELF evaluations to be able to answer some bigger questions, at least at some level. So, for instance, as we've talked about already today, some of the allowances will go to kids who are also receiving the full scholarship program in St. Paul. Because of the larger evaluation, the more focused evaluation that's in place for those kids, we will know more about the quality and the characteristics of the programs that those kids attend and the outcomes that those children achieve. So for the kids that are lined up in the scholarship programs, we will know relatively more. You also have heard that all of the kids who receive allowances will go into programs that have been through some version of the Parent Aware or MDE provisional or rated approval program. Because of the evaluation of those programs, we'll also have information about both the perceived and the real quality and outcomes that those programs produce. When this is all done, I'm to slide 13 now, SRI will be able to describe for us first how the allowances are being used as a funding strategy, as a parent access program. How are these funds opening up new opportunities for families and for programs? Secondly, how are the allowances affecting other sources of funding? How are they getting layered together? Third, how are the programs using those allowances to actually affect the quality of the services that they provide to kids? A quick summary of next steps. SRI has just recently signed a contract to initiate this work. I talked with Donna Spiker, one of the principals in California today. Their Human Subjects Protection Committee has already approved their plan, so they are ready to roll. Their intent is to wait until families have access allowances and been able to implement them for a short period of time, 3, 4, 5 months, and then to call those families and the programs that they're attending to get more information. We expect to have an interim report from them on this evaluation activity in October of this year and a final report in September of next year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. McConnell. That was impressive and well done. Dr. McConnell is one of the speakers I teach early childhood public policy. He's always the last speaker of the semester, and he's also always the most well-received. So he talks about the differences between little kids and how much they learn verbally, depending on what kind of environment they're growing up in. So another topic for another day. Members, are there questions? I have to say, here at the legislature, we don't do a very good job at evaluation. All of us know this. And so to see this laid out ahead of time, for us, is almost shocking that you're actually going to have answers to questions that for most programs in the legislature, we don't know. Because we haven't set them up that way. So this is really, really interesting. Representative Eastland?
Yeah, I mean, I have just a few things. Maybe I could, I don't know if there's no real order here, just stuff I've been trying out as we've been kind of going along. I guess we've just heard a lot of stuff about what's been going on, but at this point, we've heard nothing about kids that have actually been impacted. I guess... What's happening in terms of actual scholarships? We hear that everybody's ready and we've got all this preparation done. What's happening with actually the scholarships going out or the allowances in the different cases? And when is that going to occur? And when are we going to see actually kids involved in programs that are going to be a result of all this organization and planning that we've been talking about?
Dr. McConnell.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm the worst person to answer that question. I can answer it in general, but there are folks in the room that can answer it more precisely.
Well, I'm not directing it at you necessarily. I'm just directing it at
Remember how small my
the conversation that we've been having here.
Is there someone here that would like to answer that? I think that is a question we all have. It's been an incredible ramp up, but yeah, how are we going to, when are we going to start seeing kids? How soon? Is there somebody that can answer that? Or if you want to start?
Madam Chair, Ms. Caravo is walking up, I can say that the timeline for both the scholarship and the allowances, the scholarship had a January 1st of 2008 start date. And the allowances, I don't know for sure, have actually been initiated yet. Perhaps these folks don't. I'll stop.
Ms. Caribou?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative, just a couple of the questions. One of them is regarding the scholarships and what's the number there, and are kids starting to receive that? Today, approximately 80 children have applied and been deemed eligible to participate in the scholarship program. Some of them have not yet turned three, so they'll be getting access to a scholarship a little bit down the road. But what that means for those families is that they are getting connected to their home-based parent mentor. They are starting that process of getting connected with the Parent Aware and MBE programs and navigating that system. So that's for the scholarship itself specifically. The goal of the scholarship is to serve about 1,100 children total over the four-year pilot. Regarding the children who are receiving allowances, as I mentioned, we are now we have applications for children and families, and so we're set with resources for child care and to be starting to administer those. Families can apply for those, like I said, within the next week or so to get that process moving as well. Over the June 2009 allowance period, works up to approximately 500 children or 500 allowances. So that hopefully answers some of the numbers question.
And in the Blue Earth Nicollet area, we anticipate that children could be served by a summer Head Start program in June with the licensed child care providers. Just beginning the process of the rating system, if they went through all of that quickly, they would have their rating by June. And the school districts that we've been talking to are looking at fall in a change in their programming. That's for the allowances in Blue Earth and Nicollet County.
Representative Eastland?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. And I think it's good to hear that we're getting there. The other question that I have is in St. Paul, the allowances and the scholarship things work together, and is one hostage to the other, or I guess tell me a little bit more clearly how that works as those funds are disseminated.
Sure.
Ms. Caramel.
Representative. Like I said, we do have the opportunity to layer the scholarships and the allowances together. And so, like I said, the main overarching goal is the same. There are some specific differences, as I mentioned, with allowances of requirement of citizenship status of the child, which is not a requirement of the scholarship model itself. And so in those cases, the child would not be eligible to receive the state funding. But then the mouth money would fill in right there. And so really we've been working very, really closely with the departments to do as similar as possible as we can between the two programs. As Dr. McConnell had mentioned, you know, even with the application process and trying to smooth that out for families so that they're not answering a lot of the same questions twice. So we're really working together to try and make those programs work together.
Follow up, and then Representative Greiling will be last, and then Ms. Kotelnik, we're going to have to postpone you for another hearing. Apparently there is another committee coming in at 5:30, so we're going to have to start to wrap up. So Representative Eastland?
I'll just make a couple of comments, and then I'll ask my one last question. It's just amazing that we seem to continue to have as many contradictory kind of statements being made. I mean, it started off by somebody saying that we have 50% of our kids that aren't ready for kindergarten, according to the Minnesota Department of Education. Then they got up there and said, well, it's 12% of our kids that aren't ready for... it's just like there's just something out here. And then you know, we're concerned that we are serving kids regardless of immigration status, And yet this is a pilot program, and there's more kids than we can serve that have residence or a proper status here in this country, and yet we're concerned that we should be able to serve. I mean, we're letting issues that seem to be really not very important, in my view, get in the way of a pilot program here that's designed to help people who are here legally in this country and who are born and are citizens of this country to receive the kind of help that they need to excel in this country. And that the immigration issue is another issue. It shouldn't be involved here. And if that's holding something up, I guess in my view, it's something we should just put aside, and let's get ahead with get going with the program and start serving as many kids as we can, because we got more than we can serve that are here legally with the amount of money that we've got. I'm frustrated that we have this DHS, Department of Education, kind of issue going on. And I'm sure everybody's frustrated about that, and I think we should look for a solution to that. I'd like to see the allowances have a life of their own and not be hostage to the scholarships, quite frankly. So I don't know how we would do that, but to me that would be something that would be worth looking into and seeing if there's a way that we could do that and maybe put the allowances into the hands of the Department of Education or something so that we can get those things moving through the vehicles that are out there that might be more efficient. I'll just stop there and I'll ask my question. And my question is here, is it deals with the way that the Department of Human Services and the Department of Education work together. In this little outline that we got from St. Paul, it says the project is administered by the Minnesota Department of Human Services in collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Education and the MELF. Funding for this project is provided through the Department of Human Services, and I guess that's the one question that I have is the funding stream coming from the Department of Human Services? Is that the most efficient way to do this, or should we have another way to deliver these funds?
Representative Eastman, I think I'll take a shot at that because it was we did that to ourselves. You know, there's just
I'm asking that question.
Yeah, there's the three little words no legislator wants to hear is we did that. You know, and we all have to say that at certain times. We put it in the Department of Human Services, and so it was really something that we did to ourselves that we have talked a lot about that perhaps it doesn't belong there. And so, but it is what it is at this point, and we have to work with it. And we can talk more about that. If we come back and fund these again in 2009, we're really going to have to look at how to correct a lot of the issues you talked about. It's sort of like taking something conceptually, though, and trying to implement it in a big bureaucracy, and it's been tough. So your ideas and your concerns are very
legitimate. Could I have just one more follow-up question? The 8%, I guess I'd like to know how the 8% is determined. Was there a predetermined number of children that can be served in each of the pilots?
Ms. Kerr, were the 8% administrative costs?
And is the 8% administrative cost of the allowances, or is it of the MELF money in addition to the allowances? Is it 8% of that? And then where does the evaluation dollars come from?
Ms. Caribou, briefly, we got our committee chair, our next ready to come in.
Madam Chair, Representative, a couple of different pieces. The 8% is not involved in the MELF funding. That is particularly for the allowances. That is not part of the evaluation funding as well. So that is specifically for the administration of the allowances project themselves. And that is...
Madam
Chair.
Dr. McConnell, the last word. Now, I hate to have the chair of the K-12 committee. I guess we'll go to you and very briefly we'll have the chair of the K-12 committee say a few words.
The MELF is paying for the evaluation of the amount. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we're out of time, and I want to just express my thanks for what I've learned today and my extreme frustration, because I came here to ask very hard questions of the Department of Education and DHS, and that was the one group that I came to ask questions of, and we skipped right over them. So I just have to register my hope that you will invite them back, and then I can come back and get my questions answered. In the K-12 system, we are very interested in the exact problem that the superintendent of St. Paul cited, and we haven't even discussed that here today, and that is the quality rating system in terms of being able to interact with DHS and the Department of Education. That's something that our committee is very interested in and how it's being implemented, we have a lot of concerns. And that was part of Representative Dabney's bill. And he isn't here today, but I discussed it with him this morning, coming here to try to get to the bottom of something. So I know Representative Mullery is here, and we're not going to get to discuss it today, but I certainly hope that that we have another opportunity.
Sure, Grinling, we will. And I did ask for questions. I don't know if you were out of the room at that point, but we did. There were no questions at the right at the point we were asking, so we moved forward.
Okay.
But I think the Early Childhood Caucus is also going to hear this issue, and this is the beginning, not the end. So we very much appreciate your comments. So thank you. With that, the meeting is adjourned.